And my name is Chris.
And we are... hold it right there. We are Mimic Guys.
I'm totally lost already. The show just began. What the hell are we?
We are Mimic Guys.
What are Mimic Guys?
Mimic Guys. This is just a funny story, and I wanted to start the show with
this. Oh, okay. Yeah, good.
I put stickers on our cameras at work, and one of the grips the other day says... He just made it. Well, maybe, I mean, don't, can't you, he was like, in relation to something going on the set, well, why don't you just mimic it? And I said, and I looked at him like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you're one of the Mimic Guys, right? the sticker, your show, the Mimic Guys, right?
Oh, that's so funny. He just misread it?
Yeah. He said, oh, I thought you guys were mimics.
All right.
So, yeah. Chris, take it away.
All right. We are my Mimic Guys.
Mimic Guys.
Mimic Guys. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Well, welcome back to Los Angeles.
Yes, Henry, and you too.
This is our first show back here in Los Angeles. We took a brief hiatus after our incredibly cascading success in Macworld 2006, and here we are.
You know, I'm still in a little bit of what I consider the aftershock of the show, because I was explaining to somebody. I saw Tyler today, and she asked me, how it was. And when you try to explain it to someone else, then you have to sort of process the whole thing again. And it was kind of a little disorienting still. I'm not saying I was not prepared for public performance, and yet I am saying that, because that's the one thing I never factored in, is that how that would change how we did the show.
That's what we were going to do, actually put on a show.
Yeah, no. And even though, I still thought of it as we're just going to Macworld and we're going to have fun, the responsibility of actually performing the show live kind of went over my head a little bit. And yet, as I said, that was also the fun of it.
I agree. I mean, it was overwhelming in a lot of ways. And I think that was clear to both of us. And not that I was surprised by that, just because, I mean, when I tell people that the second day that we were the last human beings to leave the Moscone Center.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's amazing. I mean, literally, that the guys were like holding, the security guys were like, okay, guys, you got to get out of here. And it's like, I thought there'd be dozens of guys, sprawled out on the floor, finishing their podcasts or writing articles and, whatever. But there was just my Mac guys.
Clearly not professionals. Mm-hmm. No, that actually personalized it in such a strange way. To literally the lights were being dimmed at the Moscone Center, and Henry was busy uploading the show. And like you said, I thought somebody would outlast us. And actually, on the last night when we were leaving, closer or farther away?
No, closer.
Oh, yeah, there. Oh, the beautiful bass. The last night when we were leaving. A couple of guys tried to slip past security. I don't know if you heard this. They were getting a hard time from the security agent. They were trying to come in, the last minute. And he stopped them and he said, I'm sorry, you cannot go in. And they were like, we're with Apple.
Oh, wow.
And he just sort of stepped back and they walked. Funny. So it was just the Mac guys and the Apple guys.
I totally missed that. So, I mean, I guess there's a lot of things I could say about it. I mean, the thing that... I mean, I think I expressed it, during one of the shows, which is that I didn't find the experience of being there all that much different than being at any other kind of convention or show, trade show of any kind. And in general, I don't have a lot of patience I just get overwhelmed too quickly. And it's like, you can only look at so many, iTunes toilet paper holders, it's just not.
Right.
That's one of the pictures we can put up as the.
Oh, yeah.
The iPod toilet paper holder.
I just showed that off, as a matter of fact, at the house.
And so, I mean, I was really glad it happened. And I know we spoke a lot while we were there of like, maybe we should start finding out about Mac Expo or whatever the one in Paris is and all that stuff. And part of me also was like, I was so happy to be home. And I was so happy that it was kind of over in a way.
Listen, you're right on the same page with me. It's not that it's not fun to go. Like, I think at some point, after about an hour, you're just so completely overloaded that you really can't take it. And by the way, it's just nothing but salespeople. So there's,
right, exactly.
And some of them are selling pretty hard, too.
Yeah. Yep.
I like the guys that don't say anything other than, if you have a question, let me know.
Right. Well, most the guy that was kind of actually a little bit belligerent with you.
You mean the guy selling the chairs?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, man, that guy was intense. I mean, I would never buy something from somebody almost on principle. If, like, you know, I don't want to be power sold.
Right,
you know?
Of course not, yeah.
Free country.
And I mean, and on that note, it just, you know, again, I'm not expecting, and it's something we haven't spoken of much since then, but, you know, the places that I wanted to, you know, make sure that I followed up with about getting some sort of a demo software to review for the show, I did. I emailed three places. And, you know, I heard back from one of them that said, you know, oh, I'll pass along your email to the appropriate person. But I kind of realized that it's going to take a little more effort on my part. I mean, I have to go after it, which is okay. But it's kind of like, I kind of wish, like, well, you know, I would say, listen, I've picked three vendors that I think do cool things. I let them know that at the show. I followed up with the email. They, you know, and I want to talk about, you know, and I don't know why I bring it up, only that it's just like, it's a sales show. You know, it's not.
Listen, I have a bone of contention with the people at Version Tracker. That guy would not give up a T-shirt. You know, first he tells us he likes the show. He knows who we are. And, you know, we said, how many minutes were we there talking about Version Tracker, how much we loved it, how impressed we were by it.
I go there every day.
Right.
So.
And then it came down to saying, hey, listen, what, you know, can you get a T-shirt? And he's like, well, you know, we've got, why don't you get back to us on the last day?
Kurt Christensen, you know, will be hearing from me.
Yeah. But
on your behalf.
Pretty much he was saying, you know, when the important people that we'd like to give T-shirt. Right. And, you know, that's sort of the function of this whole idea of how big this podcasting thing can go. I mean, what you're really saying, Henry, is that you would have to go after it, meaning we'd have to be more serious about that side of the give and take of the product review part. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. I mean, it's, you actually hit onto something which, to be perfectly honest, you should boot up my email and I'll make you have you read something, but we may not be able to do that while we're live in the show because it's actually from my sister's boyfriend and they've gotten into a discussion about one of our shows.
Oh, I read that.
You did. It's pretty amazing, right? She forwarded you the piece about.
Yeah, they're probably two of the brightest people.
I know. It's a little.
It's a serious discourse.
Yes, I know.
It was way over my head. No, you know, I read that and I wrote them back and I said, "There's a podcast in the two of you, and it's called Rhetoric Theater,
right?
Because they really can go off." And the thing is, I was trying to figure out if they were sort of. It sounded like I was the problem, like as if something.
But it wasn't a problem. It was rhetoric.
It was just what I represented. I think there was something in some part of what I had said about the reasons for podcasting that started the conversation.
The deep bass.
I sound good in here.
You need to be right on top of it.
All right, then.
I mean, it's a very lengthy and conversation that we probably should reserve for another time because it elicited a lot of feelings in me about remembering, you know, it just was fascinating to think about it because time has gone by and so much is happening in the world in terms of like how news and information is getting continually, you know, evolving in its dissemination. And it's just, you know, and podcasting is only a minor fraction of it. I mean, I feel like we've kind of been roundabout a subject that we should have been more specific on, but back to our show.
Well, you know, and again, that is part of the show. I appreciated the fact that anyone's even having this discussion about the importance or the purity of podcasting, all this kind of, I mean, my feeling coming back, and this is just between you, I don't even know if you know that I feel this way, but, you know, I sometimes question the whole concept of continuing to, you know, put together the show for maybe a listener and maybe not a listener. I don't, it's just my own personal sort of decision of like, how much time do I want to put into it?
Right.
And I know that's probably not appropriate for on air, but well, you know what? That is our show. Henry.
No, of course
you know?
It is.
I mean, have you ever had that feeling of just going, okay, what's the point?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
You know, probably every time we get, you know, before we get together at some point, I'm, you know, weighing that as, you know, I mean, it gets back to, you know, I printed out our rules of engagement this time and, you know, Chris and I, when we went to Macworld, we kind of made up a little dictum that we wanted to follow. And you know, it helped us a lot. But, you know, because things get hard, it's good to refer back to it. And I'll just read the first one, which is have fun. When you're not having fun, say something like not having fun. And the two of us will do whatever we can to change the situation. I mean, you know, it's pretty much a credo that I try to live in my life more or less. I mean, you can't, you know, it's naive of me to think that you can just consistently go through life that way. But then again, you can try, you know, and it just comes down to the fact that if you can keep in your mind that what you're doing if you can enjoy what you're doing on some level, then you can find satisfaction in doing it and therefore have a reason to continue doing it.
Yes.
Sounds very simple and naive, but it isn't, because it's so easy to get away from that. And I think that actually, in a way, it's a, you know, this show has been a great example of kind of, sometimes it's been more fun than others, and sometimes we've, you know, decided not to do it and then restart doing it. And we always know that the part that we really like is the part sitting right here, and we kind of wish that that's all there was to it. But I mean, it's, so no, of course I've had that thought, and you know, God knows our listeners have had that thought, you know, instantaneously after we stopped podcasting for 6 months or whatever.
Although, you know, Julie's brother, I think, was living in Switzerland, a friend of mine, and he listened to the live world, Macworld shows, and, you know, just getting the tiniest bit of feedback from this sort of international flavor makes it kind of fun. And big shout out to Julie's brother.
Well, and like,
I know we've sort of, you know, taken a tangent here, but it's also part of, you know, what motivates us to do the show. And, you know, for me, it's always coming back to, I like hanging out with Hank. And we definitely have always enjoyed, you know, we normally have a conversation, you know, amongst many other things, about Mac at some point.
Right.
That was what the idea of the show was supposed to be.
Yes.
It got a little more formalized. And yet I feel like, you know, the essence of it is still that we live our lives, and at the center of our work world and play world is this thing called the Mac.
Right.
That's what the show is about.
Absolutely. I mean, I had a great moment the other day. I'm driving along my car and I get a phone call, and it's a good, you know, an old friend of mine, but somebody I haven't seen in over a year or spoken with probably. And she called to say hello, but she really called because she wanted some, you know, consultation on her next Mac purchase. And in the course of our discussing it, she reminded me of something that I was so happy to hear again, because it felt like, you know, words of wisdom from my own past. But she said, you know, you told me when I was, you know, hemorrhaging anxiety about buying my Bondi Blue iMac that, listen, you're going to own more computers than cars in your life. You just have to just accept it. You're not going to buy a computer. I mean, there's a feeling that you're going to buy a computer and that's it. And then you're just going to have this computer and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be the perfect decision. But it just isn't the case. And I think everybody, you know, clearly shares that thing. And she said that was one of the greatest words of wisdom she's ever heard concerning purchasing like something like a computer.
No, you're absolutely right. Actually, the perspective is really great. Now, you and I never think that we're buying the computer that's going to be, I mean, have you ever even thought of a five-year purchase? I mean, for me right now,
back, I mean, 15, you know, 10, 15 years ago I did.
Right.
You know, it's like, but clearly not, you know, certainly not anymore.
I'm basically looking somewhere in the 4-year range where I'll feel like, you know, I don't. And again, now with multiple computers in the house, I think the need for a new computer has diminished greatly. And so, you know, I really feel like this is the first time in my marriage that I can actually say Marion gets the next Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Like
she
needs it sort of more than I do, because my G4 is really pretty, you know, pretty smooth at this point.
Mm.
And her G3, I was just using it, you know, 10 minutes before coming here. And, you know, it's starting to show its speed. It's
right.
Definitely a little painful to get on. So for her, now the big question would be, do we go for the Intel? And it's still hard to conceive of going after what potentially is outdated technology if you go with the G4 with the PowerPC chip. And
you know,
we've talked about it.
Well, yeah, but I'm a little bit, you know, I mean, because I know I'm up for a new system relatively soon. I'm scanning the Apple refurbs basically weekly, waiting for another batch of the, you know, the G5 and a 23-inch cinema display to be available, and then I'm going to get it. But it's brought up a lot of issues. I mean, namely, and I just read an article about, you know, all the kind of consternation and understandable concern about the fact that, you know, Apple has, you know, made these paramount software shifts. I think that it's three in what they say, 3 and 9 years or 3 and 6 years. I mean, basically, that's less than that. You know, it's basically OS X is, you know, coming in and changing over that necessitated having to make significant changes to your software.
Right.
Whatever. You know what I'm saying?
They do.
Classic OS X, and then now going to this next platform. And, you know, and of course, the article was just saying it takes pretty big balls to make moves like that. I mean, most companies don't do that much. I mean, we're talking 15, 20 years, but not every couple of years. And they've gotten away with it, you know, which is
absolutely
pretty amazing.
Before we leave the subject of the Intel chip and the new computer, you know, what's baffling is if you go on the website right now, you can buy an iMac with the Intel chip for $1,299, or you can buy the G5 for $1,299. Oh, price difference. That really makes it hard to make the decision. Or does it? Because to me, you know, for the same money, what I really would prefer is the G5 drops in price and makes it attractive.
Right.
But if it's exactly the same price, I think I'm going to go with the Intel chip
with
the camera built in.
Right.
And I just kind of can't believe they haven't yet even made an attempt at differentiating between the two.
I can only imagine it's days away. I mean, it's just hard to believe that they're not going to. I mean, you know, I had read that, you know, there was no question that the switch over to, you know, other than the R&D, that the switch over in Macintel is saving them about, in terms of hardware, saves them a couple $100 a unit, you know. So it's, and I think that the reason, you know, one of the reasons they haven't dropped their price is because the incredible amount of expenditure because of the R&D and all that stuff. I'm sure they want to try to cover some of that cost. But, I mean, the other half of that conversation of just upgrading and not upgrading came up because of the, you know, my famous Pismo, because of this, you know, bad CD-ROM module, and how, you know, I contacted a friend, you know, our friend who we met, who we stayed with when we were in San Francisco, because their company, WeFixMax, also is part of FastMac, which does upgrades and accelerator stuff. And I just emailed them saying, you know, do you have replacement? You know, first I look on eBay and all the modules are $85 across the board for a used module for that thing. And that just seems kind of ridiculous. And so I emailed them, and they have them too. But what they also can do is I can send them my dead module and they'll put in a combo drive for like $90.
That sounds like the deal right there.
So I'm like, but what I found myself doing is coveting new hardware for my, you know, completely bare trailing edge, you know, this computer, and people at work are giving me shit about it because, excuse me, Mr. Ricazzo, it's just, you know.
I love that my mom has become the internet censor. She doesn't even listen to the show.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know, it's just funny, and I kind of catch myself remembering all those feelings of, like, I flashed on when I had my PowerBook 180. I mean, there was a time.
I remember your PowerBook 180, which you disassembled on the dining room table at your house. So impressed by that. That's for another subject, Make Magazine, which we have to talk about in a little while. Go ahead.
At one point, at the heyday of loving that computer, I mean, every single port had some sort of a multi-port adapter to it. I mean, I was running scanners and a CD burner and an LCD, you know, and a CRT monitor. I mean, this is all but 180. I mean, God knows what the specs were on that thing. But I mean, I was just under OS 9, and like every time it was just ridiculous.
I know. You had literally the record for extension startups. I mean,
the entire screen was covered with extensions.
You had more than one row. You had like two or three rows.
No, the entire screen. I'm saying it
went. Yeah, exactly.
It was like 10 rows.
I know. It's crazy. You know, this all started because this week, of all things, I was dumping some files, and you know, I really went into drawers that I have not gone into in years, and I found all my floppy disks. And of all the programs that I've wanted to mess with, it was Corkboard, which was 3x5, which then became Corkboard, which was made by the guys who make the screenwriting program Final Draft. So what they did was, it was a great program. We've talked about it, I think, mm-hmm. where you get to move index cards around on a cork board, and they have a little icon of a push pin, and it's a really great program for just raw ideas that you need to have. So I was really looking for the program and they folded it into the latest version of Final Draft, but it doesn't have any of the cool icon. It doesn't have any of the original feel of the program. So now I see the floppy disk in my hand. I'm like, oh, I've got the floppy. I'll run it under Classic. But I look at my computer and I realized I don't have a way to get a floppy disk into the computer. But then I remember there was a module. So I dug deeper into the closet and I found the module. And I tried shoving this module into – I took – you know, you take the CD-ROM.
This is on my Pismo. You're right, right.
Which is at home. And so I pulled module, my CD-ROM module out, and I tried putting this in. And I could not get it to go in. And I'm telling you, for about 10 minutes – I can't figure out what you do to get it in until I realized it wasn't from my computer, but it was from Marion's Wall Street,
yeah.
And which was thicker.
Yes.
And the thing didn't go in. So I called you and I said, Hank, is there any chance you have the module for the Pismo? And again, what was your answer?
No.
No, because you never had one, or you. Or
oh, you know what?
I don't think you would have bought it. It comes with it.
I think it must be in a box over there.
Okay.
You know, I my first instinct was no, but then I think I realized, and I just emailed you saying that I must have it somewhere.
Yeah.
I know that Patty's Wall Street has one, and I actually kind of remember a couple of years ago I had to borrow her computer and for access to the module, which
right.
made me think that I don't have mine. But because mine may have just taken a dump is my guess.
All right. Well, if you find it, I still would like to play with corkboard.
Oh, you know what? We'll find out tonight.
Going online, I found a lot of people wanted corkboard.
Oh, funny.
There's a lot of people, and for some reason, Final Draft, it's probably just not worth it to them, but they really could reintroduce it. I mean, there are programs out there like Idea Fisher that give this sort of, you know, blocks you can move around. But for me, just for daily projects, it was the most amazing. It's almost like making your desktop the movable corkboard.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds cool. And I've never, there's always been somebody has come along and tried to introduce, you know, some kind of really good and comprehensive idea management software. You know, something that would just, and there's ones now that sound, I wish I could remember the name of it, some demo. It's called something like six. It's a play on words of 6 degrees of separation. I think it's called 3 degrees.
Okay.
And it's a very graphically beautiful user interface that is somehow trying to basically, you know, once you get your ideas into it, that you can, you know, type in keywords and it'll access different areas. You know, like pull from your text that you've written and movies that you've shot or whatever. Somehow like using it like a brain. You know, like that.
Right.
If you give it an idea, it will show you the information it has in the hard drive concerning your idea, and then you never hear about them again because
they're all overblown, overcomplicated. It's sort of taken the HyperCard concept. Like
right.
I've tried them all. But I've tried them looking for corkboard. I went through like 3 or 4 programs. I went through like Super Note Card, Super Notepad, all these different things that claim to be a version of it, and. Some of them are archaic, even
right.
though they're just designed last year by somebody.
That's funny.
And none of them are in what was intuitive about corkboard was the drag and drop. Literally move the card. Just take your cursor and drag it, and the card moved to wherever you wanted. It had no, it had a free form
right.
Option as opposed to, you know, a snap to grid.
Right.
And there was nothing like, plus make the cards whatever you want, images, whatever. It was just a brilliant program.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. I even wrote them. Actually, I called them from New York, and I met the guys in the early days of having my outbound. I had to go to a Final Draft. I think this has been mentioned as well. And so I got to know the guys who designed the program. So I left them a message. Here I am working for PBS. And, you know, hey, this is Chris. It's been a few years. But, you know, what's the deal with corkboard? I'd love to talk to you about it. And, you know, give me a call back. And you know.
See, you should get that guy. Remember the guy that gave you the card that was a software developer?
Yes, I do.
You should get him involved with this. Because you could now become the middleman for developing a really cool piece of software.
Yeah, but
and like you know, as you've told me many times, you're the idea man.
I mean, I understand, but it's not my. I mean, I feel like even based on this conversation, what are we really talking about? But trying to emulate a program that used to exist from another company.
Making corkboard OS X native and bring it up to the 22nd century.
Yeah, but I would imagine corkboard is now part of. Protected by Final Draft.
Oh, I mean, I don't know.
Because they still use the index cards. They just use it within the screenwriting program.
Right. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well,
all right.
But it just sounds cool enough that it should be, you know, splintered off and they should... Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, as you can see, we've strayed very, very far from our show format, which is just very funny because virtually the only words we had before we started the show is like, okay, well, we'll introduce our format, you know, kind of slowly, and we'll do a few things anyway. So,
well, I think the question here was, are we going to continue in 2006 with the traditional format that we had established? And
So far, it hasn't happened. It doesn't look so good.
Although it did rein us in a little.
Right. No, so, it did.
And I think for future shows, I think we just have to. I think we still have to just do what makes us feel good.
Right.
And so far, the fans have allowed us that. And right. You know, I consider this the what we call the After the Flood show, which is that, you know, neither Hank and I have listened to the shows that we put up for the live Macworld conference. And so the last time I saw you really was when we were kind of burnt out from the long drive home and just, you know, I don't regret going up there.
Oh, no, not at all.
I do it in a flat minute. It would be really nice.
Our poster's on the camera truck at work. When if you walk by the camera truck about my job.
Oh, the poster.
The poster, yeah.
Oh, nice.
People say, who are those guys back there? Andy, how come you're on the picture? Why is there a picture on the wall?
That's so funny. Hey, listen, man, you know, that might be – I still think that the, you know, there's too many stories of happy accidents where people weren't trying and something really good happened.
Right.
That would be a perfect example of like your old posters in the back of your camera truck, but the right guy visiting set is from Sirius Radio. He's like, hey, what's that about?
What's that about?
There you go.
Okay, well, believe it or not, we're exactly at our 27-minute magic moment, and so I think that we will take the After the Flood motif and sign off pretty soon.
Although
is there something? Go ahead.
No, there is actually a one line of email that I think we should
please.
Read.
Please. See, this is our introduction back into our format.
Yeah, we're kind of
coming
back.
Show 28.
And this comes from somebody we both know, Bruce Brodoff, but in his email posting on the website says, looks like 2006 is the breakout year for my Mac guys. And Bruce is always highly optimistic.
We better tell him about the Mimic guys thing, though.
Yeah, which guys? The Mimic guys are a big year for them. But I think this was written when he heard we were going to go to Macworld. And Bruce is an avid listener, even though actually, he does own a Mac. I was thinking he didn't, but he does. So thanks for that. And I don't know about you, Henry, but it sounds like we're signing off, huh?
I think so, yeah.
All right, we'll see you next time. All right.